Welcome to another episode of Pro Running News. It's Matt and Dave speaking all about the US Marathon Olympic Trials taking place in a few days' time. I'm excited, Dave. I follow the Americans quite a bit because I used to live there. But we're going to speak all about the event.
You used to live there, mate.
Well, I lived there for a brief period of time. I'm about to move back there, but obviously having filmed a whole lot of them, I'm quite invested in quite a few of their journeys. So thanks for joining me on this one, Dave, because I've obviously gotten to know quite a few of the athletes taking part. But anyway, we'll talk about that soon. But Dave, I want to start because we spoke before this about the selection criteria for these American marathoners to actually make the team. And I feel like if you ask 100 people in the sport of running, maybe three or four might know it. And you're one of those three or four. So you can explain to us because I actually still don't fully understand how that works. So we'll talk about that and then we'll talk about our predictions, some of the dark horses, some of the inside information we might have, and then we'll finish it off there.
Yeah, well, I'll do my best here to explain them. And, you know, we went through this, if you remember back to episode 5, and if you're still listening from episode 5, firstly, thank you. Secondly, if you haven't listened to that, might want to go back to that one. It's from over a year ago, still going strong, thankfully. So basically, at that point, World Athletics made the decision that they wanted 50% of the qualifiers to come from running the time and 50% to come from points. Obviously, in the marathon, this is a little bit tough because points are a bit different and, you know, it's not quite a track race or whatever. But anyway, that's kind of the genesis of the sitting in the background here. In effect, the US have a different policy to everybody else. Well, many countries have different policies. You know, Australia is pretty much like they have some discretion, but they pretty much choose the fastest three. The US is first three from the trials if they have three places. But to earn three places, they have to have three people qualified for the Olympics. So in effect, what happens is individuals qualify and then America can shuffle the deck as to who goes. So it's foreseeable that Conor Mance, having qualified, has a shocking race for whatever reason, and then someone goes in his place. That's certainly a possibility, right? So at the moment, America have two qualifiers, Conor Mance being one of them, and the second one eludes me. I can't remember who it was that ran 2:00. Clayton Young. So those two have run the qualifier. Therefore, America have earned two spots. If a third person runs the qualifying time, and that's not to say, well, if three people run the qualifying time, three people run the qualifying time. But if, say, the winner on the weekend hasn't run the qualifying time but runs it on the weekend, they've automatically qualified three places, and then they'll send three people again. All right. So if they run 2:07 on the weekend as the winning time, there you go, three people. Provided that the third person, right? So if Conor Mance runs, or the 2:11 comes in where you have to have run at least that to get to the Olympic Games. If you haven't run at least that, you are not going to the Olympic Games. So that's kind of the thing there. So in essence, there is going to be a race for people to run 2:11:30 to be eligible, in addition to the race to run a qualifying time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Gotcha. So I have a hypothetical, which is unlikely to happen, but what if it does? Conor Mance, so the Olympic standard is 2:08:10. Clayton Young's run 2:08:00. Conor Mance has run 2:07:40-something. And after that, we've got a few 2:08s. But no more under the 2:08:10. What happens if someone wins, say, Scott Forbill or Galen Rupp in 2:07 low, and then two more guys run 2:08 mid who do not have the sub 2:08:10, and that neither of them are Clayton Young or Conor Mance?
They both go top three.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, there's Conor Mance and Clayton Young have earned two spots for the team. So all you need is one more person to run the qualifier, and then they can send three, and they will send the first three across the line. So the real question is, what if nobody runs 2:08 on the weekend? And who can then go, and how would they go? And the answer is, Scott Forbill is, I think, ranked in the top whatever on the road to Paris, whatever the number is. So he's still foreseeably going if he's got a fast enough time, which I think he does. But that is then contingent on other people not running faster to kick him out from countries that have not yet got a full team. So Australia being one of them, for instance, perhaps Japan. I'm not sure what Japan's stocks are like, you know. So countries that have not yet qualified, you know, people from countries who have not yet qualified can bump him down that list.
It's a bit strange to me how the World Athletics has sort of almost turned it into a team sport in a way. Because in theory, three people could run 2:07 and break the 2:08:10. I know this is never going to happen, but hypothetically, they could all then miss the trials, or one or two could run it and run poorly, and one could be sick and not run it. Three other guys come in and run 2:09, and those three guys that run 2:09 will go at the trials. Is that right?
Yes, but that's America turning it into that. World Athletics doesn't. World Athletics should say to people, you're allowed to. And the reason you can send, if you've qualified three, you can send three is because injuries happen.
Yep.
So like that makes sense from that standpoint. Like you can shuffle your team around based on injury and select whoever you want is reasonable, provided you've qualified three.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thanks for filling me in there because I was still a little bit unclear, although I did have a feeling that was how it rolled. But now that we're 3 days out from the race, forecast is out. I've taken a look. It's going to be around about sort of 18 to 22 degrees Celsius, sort of mid 60s to low 70s, humidity of around 60-65%. Probably whatever all the athletes would have expected in Orlando around this time. When I was looking into this a couple of months ago, we were looking into this a couple of months ago, and we looked at the sort of forecast around early Feb. It was saying it was going to be around that, should be. So probably no surprises. But I mean, in your eyes, I've got a few answers here. Who do you think this favors, if anything? Because, we've spoken about training in the heat and in the cold before, and at least for someone like myself, running in 5 degrees Celsius and 20 degrees Celsius, it's two totally different races for me. So, let's go through these. I know a few, especially Galen Rupp is very good in the heat, but we can go through what this means for the athletes.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's not super hot, right? So the people who are really good in the heat and who actually truly believe they're good in the heat, as opposed to I race okay in the heat, people who are like, no, I've raced my best races in the heat. People like Lindsay Flanagan come to mind, who, you know, she's in Australia doing a heat block in addition to being in a hot part of Australia, all that stuff. She's probably going, geez, if it's a heat wave and we get a randomly hot day, like I'm stoked, because she's also probably not the favorite otherwise, right? I don't think many people have her qualifying in their lists of people. I don't think many people think she's going to qualify, with all due respect. And I'll preface this whole episode with, like, these episodes are tough to do for these sort of reasons. You don't want to talk badly about people, but you kind of have to have an opinion to some degree. So, you know, apologies if we're offending people. We're trying our best not to, or at least I am. I don't know about you, Matt. You can do what you want. but regardless, so I think people like Lindsay, who are fringe or outside chances, who are very good in heat, are probably wishing for it to be hot. And I think, you know, that's kind of who it advantages. I think Galen's another one. I think most people, if they're honest, particularly outside of America, probably think Galen's probably a bit of a bit less of a favorite, a bit more of a dark horse. Yes, he's got a great PB, but he's also certainly not on the upward trajectory anymore. And he certainly has struggled to perform consistently over recent years. Now, of course, he ran well in Chicago last year, but we're talking about, you know, of the last 3-5 marathons he's done, how many have been good? And the answer is probably one. So for him to get it right again is, it's infinitely possible, but also a little bit difficult. And he doesn't need to have his best day to win the trials. That's be clear as well, or to qualify. But the reality is he's probably wishing for a bit of a hotter day as well to get top three. Because this is the other thing, is like your time is irrelevant to some degree on the weekend because you have to get top three. So I'd say those are probably the people. Anyone else that comes to mind for you, Matt?
Yeah, Galen Rupp's definitely one. I mean, we saw him. I was in Chicago Marathon 2021 where he ran 206. In 24, 25 degrees Celsius, which is like mid to high 70s. And that came not long after running a 62-minute half. He ran a 62-minute half a couple of weeks back at Houston, pretty similar. We can't really tell how hard that was for him, whether it was a marathon effort run or was it actually all out half marathon. It seemed to me like in photos, it looked like it was pretty hard towards the end. But if he wasn't a huge volume week, which he probably was 4 weeks out from the trials, 3 weeks out from the trials, then he was probably very tired. And to run a 62 on tired legs, maybe even as a sub maximal effort is pretty good. Other people that come to mind in the men's race that are good in the heat. Look, I mean, the African born runners. So Leonard Career, Futsum, I know he's not, he's African born, I believe, a couple more. They, Sam Chilenga, I mean, those guys are probably likely going to be, it's going to favor them. I don't know, Africans, at least Kenyans for sure, they tend to find it a little bit more challenging when it gets quite cold. Now, that's not all of them, of course. That's sort of a generalized statement. But at least when I'm training in Kenya and it's sort of 8-9 degrees Celsius, these guys are in jackets, long sleeve, you know, they're fully rugged up, and they even have a hard time getting out of that gear to do their workout sometimes because it's cold for them. Now, you know, some people are probably thinking, yeah, but Kelvin Kiptum just ran 2 hours in 9 degrees, so it can't be that bad for them. You know, I'm not saying this is all of them, but I do think that in general, you do tend to see the African runners run pretty well when it's on the warm side, and maybe are a little bit negatively affected when it gets to maybe below 6-7 degrees Celsius, which is what, like high 40s Fahrenheit. So I think those guys will probably have a mini advantage, so to speak. But transitioning to the women and relating to the weather, you know, you can't go past Molly Seidel. I mean, she ran She came third at Tokyo when it was hot. That was obviously a very surprising run, given that she didn't win the trials, but she came third at the Olympics. You cannot count her out. I mean, she's posted very little on Strava over the last 4 weeks. It looks like she's turned that off around January 4, which coincidentally is 1 month before the trials. She might have planned that. She was training pretty well before that, based on everything I've seen on Strava and everything I've heard and understood. And yeah, I think she's going to be a... Can you call the reigning Olympic medalist a dark horse? I'm not sure if you can call him that. But I think...
Well, mate, I listened to your sweat elite, in my opinion. You didn't even have her in the top five, mate. You had her outside the top five. Yes, you did.
No, I know. Yeah, no, I didn't have her in the top five. But I think I saw too much good insight from other ladies, and I think she was phased out due to that. So I very well might be wrong there. But
I think this is the challenge with these sort of things is there are six women plus, maybe seven women. Like for me, at least there's six women that you said to me, you know, fast forward a week and these women got top three, any of those six or seven women. And I'd be like, yeah, of course. But also if you said to me, any of those seven women got six or seven, I'd be like, oh really? And the reality is six or seven doesn't go into three. That's what makes it difficult on that side. You know, like, so I think we're going to see two different races. One is going to be surprising in terms of who misses out and kind of not so much who gets in the women's side. And in the men's side, it's going to be a little bit surprising on who gets in, because there's not a lot of true like out and out favorites or people who are, you know, true classes above the rest. There's a lot of guys who are better, but not, you know, otherworldly better. Like if you took those six women to the Olympics, they would all do well.
Mm.
Whereas if you take the top six American guys, like there's going to be some guys who struggle there at the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. I think you're dead right there. I think the top six seeded women, or even you could even argue that some of the ones outside seeded the top six. So Nell,
yeah.
Alafine, you know, these ladies aren't even ranked in the top nine. Alafine's ranked 10th. Nell is ranked 13th. It wouldn't even surprise me if either of those two made the team and came top 15 at the Olympics, right? So the depth here in the women is phenomenal. There's probably eight or nine women here that it wouldn't surprise me if they came top 15 at the Olympics. Whereas to your point, in the men's, there's probably only two or three that I can see placing in the top 15 at the Olympics. Maybe four at most. So, yeah, it's definitely a very, I mean, what a time to be a female marathoner in the States. It's so hard. You basically have to be in sub 220 shape to be a chance of making the team, in my opinion.
To be honest, that's pretty true in Australia and the UK too as well.
That's
like
true, yeah.
Those three countries, if you compare women to men, seem to be disproportionately performing in the women's marathon compared to the men's. But back to your point around the heat, you know, in generally, and I don't want to generalize too much, but generally in East African runners, they have a higher surface area to body weight ratio. So compared to non-East Africans, and that gives them a better ability to dissipate heat. So they lose heat better than you or I might, which will help them in the heat and not so much in the cold. So just for like science, little bit of science there as to what you're saying.
That's why we have you on the podcast, Dave. So it's not just all me coming up with my random opinions that have no backing. So that's the reason why they're good in the heat.
Well, let's get back to the thing you are good at though, which is like talking about, so we talked a bit about weather and those sort of things. Like I was thinking about this today, and what I reckon is, it's easier to just give picks or whatever, but I think what we should do is talk about the situations in which certain people will thrive and potential race scenarios. So in my mind, the women's race is almost certainly going to be a tactical race. I've heard people saying, oh, they're going to go out fast. I have no idea why anybody would do that. Because if you're in that top six, top seven, top eight, it doesn't matter. If you think you are a chance at the top three, yes, you have to win that. But before you can win or get top three, you have to not lose. And there's a surefire way to make sure you're going to like risk it. And the way you're going to risk it is by going out too hard and blowing up or getting too hot or something like that. So I just don't see, you know, Molly Seidel or, you know, Sarah Hall or anybody else like that going out too hard. I just don't see that. I see them all sitting around going like, I'm good here. Now, of course, someone like Molly has probably not got the track speed of the rest that might go a little bit earlier. But I don't see her going before halfway. Like, I just don't see that happening. I think it's going to be tactical to at least halfway, perhaps further. What's your thought there in terms of like whether you think that's the way the race would play out?
I probably would have said it almost exactly the same way as you did. You had, I don't know many of those girls personally, but of course we've both seen them race quite a lot. And I get the feeling that you're 100% right, and that I can't envision any one of those girls that we've mentioned, or women, to really push the pace early. I just don't know why they would. And there's a lot of women in that field that seem to me, listening to podcasts and listening to interviews and watching them race, they seem to be a pretty intelligent bunch of women, in a sense of like just great racers and know how to race very well. You know, specifically more Molly, Emily Sisson, Sarah Hall, Kiara D'Amato, Nell. I think we might see someone like Betsy Sainer go off the front and push the pace early. Why? I don't really know. I mean, she actually is probably the fastest 5K, 10K runner maybe in the field, so it doesn't actually really make that much sense for her to do that. But then again, those days of running super quick over 5 and 10 are a long time ago now. That was in sort of 2016 and that era, and we're 8 years past that. So I don't know, but she's a sort of athlete that just might sort of jump in there and go, all right, I'm here, I'm American now, let's see what you girls have got. And I can sort of see her, or maybe even Alaphine, or maybe even both of them, pushing the pace early. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. It probably would make a lot of people wonder why they're doing that, but I wouldn't be surprised to see something like that. But I can't envision an American-born lady push the pace early. And I also think I can see Molly Seidel or Kiara D'Amato, or maybe even Emily Sisson, go around the sort of 20 to 30K mark, somewhere in there, and to start pushing it and winding it up and trying to get rid of some of the people that are pretenders or you know, maybe shouldn't be there.
Yeah. And so if it is tactical, right, we're saying it's slow. Let's say it's going to be, I mean, slow is hard to say, these women are so fast, but let's say it's going to be 2:23, 1:23 or something like that. Who are your picks? Who's going to, like, who's your, let's just do one. Let's just say who does particularly well. Like, let's go with one person that you're comfortable guaranteeing makes top three in this scenario, because I think that's the nicer way to do it.
Okay, so you're giving me a scenario as in a winning outcome, and then I have to basically pick one woman that I'm have to place my money on to go through.
To go to the Olympics, so top three, right? So and it's not she has to win, but she probably, but she has to, is tactical, probably finishes 2:23, 2:24. So it's obviously going to speed up late.
Yep.
So what is that? Who's your pick there?
I'm going to remain with my overall pick of the winner, Emily Sisson.
Okay. I see. I'm going Betsy Sainer. Like, I'm going with that 5-10K speed. If it goes fast at the end, like, it's foreseeable that someone like Emily Sisson, though she is fast, gets run out of it for whatever reason in a sprint finish, right? So
Betsy's a very strong pick. The reason why I went with Emily is because she recently had the half marathon American record. She's got speed. She can run a really quick half. She can run a really quick 10. She did win the trials, Olympic trials 10K. Yep. In heat, by the way, I kind of actually temporarily forgot about that. She dominated the trials at the Olympics in the 10K on the track in the heat. Very hot that day. Yep. So I think I'm going to put in bold Emily Sisson.
I mean, she's a pretty safe bet to go to the Olympics. If you had to bet on one person in all race scenarios, I think she'd probably be most people's pick, given she's the record holder, performed in heat, performs well regularly, doesn't have many bad races. You know, so all those things. I'd say if you had to only pick one person that you're pretty certain is going to the Olympics, I'd say it's her. But marathon's a funny beast. You know, she could easily have a bad day. Or other women could have a really good day. So I think we've gotten to the next one, which is picks if it's not a tactical race. I think, I think that's probably, I think we probably know. And then we sort of talked already about, like, who do we think might go early to try and break the race open if someone does that. And I see people, I think you've mentioned them. It's people who are probably a bit more game psychologically, or somebody who's a little bit of an outsider. And I don't know who that would be. Maybe Lindsay Flanagan or someone like that, who goes, the only way I can get in here is if I make sure that I burn everybody off early and I'm really comfortable in this heat and I'm going to go early. But yeah, I don't know who that would be other than, I'm using Lindsay, but I got no idea, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you actually sort of said this earlier on. I think Molly Seidel is one to do that. I think she knows over a sprint finish, she's likely to be at risk. So, you know, at the Olympic Games, where she had her best run of her life, even though it wasn't the fastest time, she stuck with the pace early on and just made sure that middle section between sort of 15 and 30K were really strong. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised if the question was, who do you envision seeing making a move just after halfway or around 30K? I would go with Molly Seidel.
Yeah, that's fair. I tend to agree with you. Men's, this is a bit more interesting, I think, in some regards. So there are probably three scenarios I see happening here. Something similar to what we just talked about, which is tactical race finishes in 2:12, 2:13. Now, it's pretty slow for the men. Again, not slow, but, you know, given some of the caliber of these athletes, it's pretty slow. So in that scenario, with you know, a tactical race, fast finish, who do you think's got it?
I think if we're going with a 67, 68 minute first half and a kick down to run 212, 213 with a sort of 64, 65 second half, I think it's going to be very hard to beat Paul Tolimo.
Yeah.
Because the guys run 12:57. I'm almost certain he could have run closer to 12:50 if he just got the right race in the last 5 years, but he just hasn't been in one of those diamond leagues where they run super quick. He's only run a half in 62, but he's only his first one. He actually went out at 58, 59 minute pace and blew up. I don't know. Something tells me that he's going to be really hungry for this. And if it's a slow race, we've all seen him wind up in the last couple of laps of a track race. It's going to be really hard to beat him at the end.
Yeah, that's my gut as well. He's the whole weekend, the thing I'm most interested in is him. I just want to see what he does. And to some degree, this speaks to what we talk about so much of this podcast, and listeners who've heard this before are going to like audibly eye roll at me. But because I know a bit of his story, because of some of the storytelling you've done around him, I now have buy into him. And that's like where we're struggling in running, but we digress. Mm. What about if it's a bit of a tactical race, but finishes 2:11-ish, right? So you've got people who are trying to run that 2:11:30 standard, or that's the sort of winning or top three times. Who's one person you think is going through for sure?
I'd still probably go with Tolimo at 2:11, but I think Mance is going to be pretty dangerous over that too. The guys run 3:37 for a 1500, not so long ago either. Yeah. So he's got serious wheels, yeah. And we know how big his engine is to get to the 35K yeah. mark comfortably at 2:11 pace. You know, they recently posted on Strava. So just quickly, sorry, they recently posted on Strava an 8-mile tempo run around 13K, where they basically did the first 7 miles at about 2:06 marathon pace, and they did the last mile at about, it was 4:19, so I don't even know what marathon pace that is, maybe 1:55. But they basically kicked down massively in the last mile. But that tells me they're really comfortable running 7 miles at 2:06 pace. So if you put them at 2:11 pace, what's that feel like? So I think Connor Mance is going to be pretty comfortable at 2:11 pace. I can see him, if it's 2:11 pace at 30K, I can see him winding it up from there. I think he's going to be hard to beat. I think him and Chalimo come down to a sprint finish if it's 2:11. What about you?
Yeah. I was actually going to, what I was going to say when you said, just to keep going, like that's the workout I was going to bring up, hearing it from, when I heard that on your podcast, I was like, this guy's ready to sprint finish this thing. He's there. He's like ticking off all boxes towards making the trials and going through, which is, yes, I'm top couple fastest in this race and I'm training to be faster than that. But also if it is tactical and I have to sprint finish, I can wind this thing up. And where do I think that winding it up makes sense? Probably the last 10 miles with a fast last mile. So I'm going to prepare specifically for that. And I think that's kind of, I think that's where he'd be really comfortable with. I think if it's slow through 30 kilometers or 10 miles or 20 miles or something like that, I think he might start taking it off the front, or he'd be comfortable to go off the front with whoever goes trying to, you know, burn them off late. So I think that's, it's pretty good. And now what about 2:08 pace, right? So they're trying for the Olympic qualifier now. Who are you picking? Is it still going to be Connor? Because like that's a very reasonable pick to pick Connor Mance in all three of these scenarios. Is there someone else who you think is pretty guaranteed if they go through at 2:08 pace?
Yep, I think Galen Rupp's got it at 2:07, 2:08. I think 2:08 low or anything faster, I think Rupp is going to be the man to beat. Why do I say that? Proven racer, loves the heat, has repeatedly run 2:06 to 2:08 in warm conditions. Yes, he hasn't done anything super special this year or last year, 2023, really. But the guy's just the GOAT, right? American GOAT, obviously. But he tends to perform when it really matters. He's won an Olympic medal over the 10K. He's got speed. Obviously, that speed's not necessarily still there in the same sense, but that was a while ago. But I think he's just so mature and he's so experienced at this game. I think his experience will win, and he will probably not win by much, but I think it will come down to him winning by less than 20 seconds if it's anything around 2:08 or faster.
Yeah, I think it's pretty right. Like he would be the one comfortable and knowing his body in the way that, yeah, I can sit at this pace the whole time. Because when I'm talking about this scenario, I'm saying like they got out at 2:08 pace from the start and run that pretty consistent. They run pretty even, or maybe a slight positive or negative split. And I think in that case, yeah, you're looking at the favorites in that. And he would be one of them for the reasons you've said, perhaps. So next one I wanted to get to, dark horses. I mean, we talked about Paul Chalimo. I think he's probably a dark horse in many in many people's minds. Most people wouldn't be picking him to go through. I think he needs the race to go his way to go through. I don't think he's running 208 pace even with everybody else, and he happens to, you know, I don't think that's the scenario in which he wins. I think it needs to go his way. Person needs to have something go wrong for them. He needs to speed it up late. It needs to be a slower start or something like that. But you know, what about you?
I think there's a few people that could be dark horses here. I don't know if you can call CJ Albertson a dark horse. I think you can, because his best is 210 and he's ranked number 14. Sure. But I say this all the time. It's only a matter of time until that guy just randomly runs like 206. That's what I think, based on his training and based on everything. Yeah. I just think the stars haven't really aligned for him. He ran like 3 marathons in like a very short period of time at the end of last year, in all in 211. I mean, that's wild. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if we even see him in the top 3 at the end, or if he really pushes the pace through 20 to 30K and makes a big move. I mean, we've seen him do that before at major marathons. So I think he's my big dark horse, him and Leonard Carrier. I've heard rumors, whispers on other podcasts and things that Leonard Carrier is in phenomenal shape. You know, African born. Little bit of maybe question marks around. I mean, he's posted nothing, right? We don't know anything about what his build-up is. That's a shame, in my opinion. I think, obviously, from a standpoint of a spectator, we want to see a little bit more about that. But I've heard he's matching it with the 204 guys in training, so he could be dangerous too. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you match it with 204 guys, then you just got to put together a race day. I think if CJ Albertson takes a good one, if you said who's going to blow the race open, I think everybody bets on CJ Albertson. If you say who's going off the front early and trying to blow this thing apart, I think most people would just go, yeah, of course CJ would do that. So we'll see. I'm kind of excited by that as well. I want to see what he does. I think we all kind of like people who are a bit orthogonal to the norm, and I think CJ would be one of those. The only questions around him are like his prep time, because of all those marathons he ran in the back end of last year, and like how much he's done and all that sort of thing. But maybe he's taken the Yuki prep scenario where he just races frequently. Right, Matt, who's going to be disappointed? So this is a hard one, but like, you know, it's Tuesday morning. Who's sitting there going like, geez, I missed out here, I'm disappointed? Who do you think it is? Or a couple, so men and women's and a men's.
Can I just very quickly share a dark horse in the women's?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't even think about that.
No, you're good. Dark horse in the women's, I think I'm going to go with friend who has told me she is in phenomenal shape, Nell Rojas.
I was going to say you can't say Nell. I knew you were going to pick Nell. I was like, oh, I was going to preface it, you can't pick Nell, but yeah, okay, Nell's the one. I actually feel similarly about CJ Albertson. Similar about Nell than you do about CJ Albertson. It's like she's due for a fast one. Like, yep. It feels like she's due for... Yeah, like, I mean, to her credit, she hasn't run a lot of faster marathons in terms of, like, horses, but it feels like she's in shape to run a lot faster than she has, so I'm interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, so for those not familiar, I've done a bit of training with Nell, and I did spend some time training with her dad. I've trained with her a bit. I've seen her drop me in, you know, 35K runs pretty aggressively towards the end when I've been in pretty close to my best shape, so she seems to think she's in that similar shape or better. So I'm looking forward to seeing how she does, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if you see her in the top 3. So she's my dark horse.
Yeah, I mean, given what I think of her, I wouldn't be surprised, but I'd also be a little bit surprised given that means that one of those 6-7 other women are not in there, right? And it's probably not surprising that she performs that well, as much as that another one of the other women didn't perform better, because you've got multiple women there who are sub 220. So like, it's a huge, it'd be huge for her. So it'd be cool to see. I don't know if I have another dark horse. I mean, maybe Lindsay Flanagan. Let's go with that, I guess. I mean, I just feel like I've said her name about 6 times in this podcast, probably more than any other podcast she's been mentioned on, prepping for these trials. But so who's disappointed? Who's disappointed come Tuesday?
Betsy Sena.
Interesting.
That's my pick for the women's. I reckon she's... I have no real reasoning, to be honest. It's just a gut feel. You know, sometimes you just have a gut feel. I think she's coming in here. I think she's sort of thinking, okay, I'm not racing a major where I've got a whole lot of Kenyans and Ethiopians to challenge. I don't know. My gut feel is she might push it a little bit early, and she might maybe regret it later on, and she's going to go home disappointed. That's my gut feel. I don't really have much of a reasoning behind it, because she's in apparently phenomenal shape. She's a 220 marathoner. She's run the fastest, I believe, 5 and 10K in the field. I could be wrong. At least it's right up there. So I can see her potentially going home disappointed. What do you think about the women?
Yeah. Sarah Hall. It just feels like she's not going to get top three. I struggle to put her in there. Like, it's not that she doesn't have the pedigree. It's just that the other girls are so good as well. All the other women are so good as well. Just look at her and go, like, she's going to race a really good race. I just don't know if that's good enough. I don't know if you can run a really good race and be good enough. Like, if you go there and run 2:19, you may not make the team. That is foreseeable. And I just don't know. For some reason, I just have this gut feeling like maybe she doesn't make it, which is, you know, pretty sad for her and all those things. But, like, I could see, you know, Emily Sisson, Kira D'Amato, Molly Seidel running 2:18 and then or faster, and then, you know, or whatever. And then Sarah doesn't quite make it under 2:19 or whatever, right? Like, that's, if I said to you they all ran 2:18, everyone would be like, geez, those are all great runs. It's just one of them doesn't go to the Olympics then, right? Or maybe not 2:18, but equivalent time given the heat, like a heat adjusted time equivalent to that. So, you know, it just feels like she's a chance of missing out. So, yeah.
Very fair. On to the men.
What about the men? Yeah.
Yeah. What do you reckon? My one is Clayton Young. I listened to a couple of interviews of him in the last couple of days. It is, I mean, as you can imagine, with almost probably all the top 20 guys, it's fundamentally his dream of making this team. He has put everything into it. He's been training with Connor Mance. He has been not keeping up with Connor Mance, but from what I understand, he also wasn't really keeping up with him in training too much before they both ran Chicago, where they were 207.47 and 208.00, so only 13 seconds apart. but I don't know. I can see him missing the team. I think he's going to come fifth or sixth, and going in with the second seed, you'd be pretty confident you're going, I would say. But I'm sure, having listened to his interviews, I think he's very aware and very aware that the guys are right on his heels, and this is going to be a very difficult team to make, as it is every single year. But I think with my gut feel, I can see Clayton Young coming fifth or sixth and being very disappointed after the race. Who's yours?
Scott Fobel. I think
he would be very disappointed if he misses out. This is his dream for sure.
Yeah, I just think that there's a chance he comes third, and that isn't good enough. In that he misses out at the Olympics anyway. So I think, you know, maybe on Tuesday he's disappointed, and then he ends up making the Olympics. That's a foreseeable scenario. The other foreseeable scenario is he's happy, he's third, and he thinks he's going to make it, and then he doesn't make it in the end. But I can also see Scott has run really well, and he's a very good runner, but he runs a really even race, and he runs a really smart race. And I think if CJ takes it out and everyone goes with CJ and they blow to bits, Scott makes the team, in my opinion.
Mm.
But there's also a chance that doesn't happen, and they run a pretty, like, everyone's a bit cagey looking around, and they go late in a more tactical race. And I think Forbel's got no chance in that scenario. He's too smart a runner. Like, he'll sit there, and I just don't think he has the speed to outkick Mance and Young and Chelimo and like, it doesn't feel like he's doing that. He runs really even races. I think his dream scenario is that the pack goes out at 208 or 207 pace and blows to bits, and he just runs really smart through the field and picks them all up and ends up running like 209 or 208 or something, but even rather than like a huge positive split. And I think in that scenario, he does really well.
Yep. I think that's a good call. I do have Forbel in my top three, but I think you've made a good call there. I think that's very possible. Yeah.
Yeah, I think most people would say Mance is pretty much a lock, and then there's, you know, probably Young or something like that. And then you've got the people on the bubble, so to speak, or the people who are like on the edge. That will depend on how the race goes. I think if you say it's definitely going to be tactical, slow and then bust late, people start leaning towards the Chelimos or the whatever. And if you say it's going to be the other way, where it's going to be pretty fast from the gun and people are going to blow up and it's going to be messy, people will probably lean towards Forbel. And I don't think there'd be, like, I don't think there's too much argument there. I think it just depends on how you think the race will play out.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, Forbel and Chelimo both want two very different races. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. So
yeah, Forbel wants it to be 207 high from the start. Forbel wants it to be sort of 207 high, 208 low from the start. That's probably his best chance of making it. Whereas Chelimo, yeah, he wants it 210 plus. And if it's 207, I just can't see Chelimo making it. He'll drop at 35.
Yeah, he'll go out at that pace. He'll hang on as long as he can. It'll just not quite be enough. You know, very much like similar to our episode where we talked about stepping up to the marathon. It's not the same, particularly. And I was going to say this about Galen Rupp. half marathon doesn't translate so well to the marathon, especially if you're running a route of like probably under 66 or 67. Once you're running faster than that, the physiology is so different between the half and the marathon that it doesn't convert up like it does for the rest of us humans.
Interesting.
So
I would actually love to talk more about that at some point. I sort of already knew that, but I didn't really fully understand it from the scientific standpoint.
Well, we'll do that in a coming episode if you think so. Write in on Instagram. Let us know if you want us to talk about that. We definitely could do so. But that's it for another episode of Pro Running News. So thank you very much. That is our Olympic Trials preview. We will probably be back with an Olympic Trials review if it's interesting enough. If it goes as we think and favorites get through and nothing much happens, don't hold us to that. But we do have some interesting cool content planned. We're going to talk about heart rate monitoring. That is upcoming. Matt and I have a bit of a friendly debate, although it wasn't really much of a debate. We've got a Boston Marathon episode coming up talking about prepping with some advice from some of the listeners as well, which I think is going to be really fun and really cool. So listen in for those. Also, share this with a friend. Please rate the podcast, and we will talk to you and see you next time.